Hi, lovely listeners. Welcome back to 10 Things I Hate About an Outlander podcast. This week's episode looks at season 5, from The Ballad of Roger Mac to Never My Love. We did have a struggle with the sound, so it's a bit unbalanced between myself and Ruth. Please bear with us throughout the episode. And we also refer incorrectly to the band, The Association, as The Associates. Sorry about that. And one final thing. We need to add a trigger warning to this episode as we discuss themes of rape and sexual violence.
We all have our favourite shows, but there's always something that comes along that means you like it a little less. The technical term is the scrappy-doo effect. Two friends create a safe space to talk about their favourite show, Outlander, all the things they love about it and some of the things they hate. Although we all love Outlander, there are things we hate. Admit it, there's always something. So we've created a safe space, a space for all Outlander lovers to share their dark secrets, but mainly it's a space to share ours. Every week we'll discuss episodes, their themes, feminism, what we love, and every week we'll talk about something we hate. Roger. Yep, we hate him. But let's be clear, we don't hate Rick Rankin. We have a clear grasp on reality. So join us, gentle viewer. Join Sharon and Ruth, two England-based Outlander fans, as they discuss love, hate, and time travel.
And our episode notes are up. Great. Right. Good evening.
Hi, Sharon. Hello. Hello, lovely listeners. Wherever you're listening to episode 13.
I know. Wow. Ballad of Roger Mac to Never My Love.
Yeah.
This was intense.
Oh, it was intense. It was. I really forgot how intense this half a season was.
And I think
there's a lot of bad shit that happens.
Yeah, like as a half a season, like if you're not watching it as a whole season, just this half, something insanely intense and like life-changing happens to every those four characters. Those like Bree, yeah. Roger, Jamie, and Claire.
Yeah, and it's wild.
Actually Jamie twice, actually. But you're just like, oh my God, I can't. Because when I was thinking back, I was thinking back about the incident with Bree and Bonnet. And I was thinking, oh yeah, that's over a few episodes. And then I was like, it's just one episode because there's so much else to happen.
Yeah. It's like the writers just decided to like neck a load of speed and just be like, how much intensity can we add into every episode?
Intense. It was really like, I mean, when you think back to the first half, when there's some episodes that are like, you're like, even when they go to Brownsville and stuff, and you're like, oh, plodding along a little bit, which it didn't really feel like at the time, but compared to this back half,
oh yeah, the second half, season, it's a roller coaster,
a real roller coaster for sure. But before we get into chatting through
let's not jump ahead,
and we wanted to just mention some of our listeners who've reached out to us, and if you'd like to reach out to us as well, please do so on our email, which you can find in the description of the podcast, but it's also just 10thingsoutlander@gmail.com. And then you could also follow us on Instagram, which again, the link should be there, and send us a DM if you'd like. And this, we've heard from a few people this week. One was Delia, who loves to hate Outlander, which is really nice to hear. She has a hate, but loves to hate Outlander itself, and was really excited to have an outlet for all these emotions, which is really, which I was giggling at. Thank you for that, Delia.
We create a safe space, Sharon. We create a safe space.
Absolutely. And then we also heard from Trish in Australia, who only stumbled across the pod a few weeks ago and said that we'd really opened her eyes to Roger, which we loved, of course, another convert. And she was saying she would be disappointed when it's over, but we wanted to mention that we have a few things up our sleeve that we're thinking over, so that there's not too much of a gap between the end of season 6 and 7. So we've a couple of ideas, so watch this space. And we also had a really nice message from Meg in Melbourne, who has blitzed all 13 episodes quite quickly. So well done for having the strength to get through listening to me. quite quickly. I don't think even my husband has done that. So
mine definitely hasn't.
We really appreciate it, Meg. Thank you so much. And yeah, that's just a few people who reached out to us in the last week or so. So yeah, if you want to send us a message, please do.
Please do let us know, like, your thoughts about the pod, thoughts about Outlander, things we've said that you might agree or disagree with. It's just really lovely to hear from people. Super nice.
Really nice. And especially as now we're going into season 6 soon.
Yeah.
So it'll be really interesting to hear what people's thoughts are over the course of all, like, 15, I think we'll have 15 episodes just on the series.
Yeah.
That'd be really good because we can always go back and chat over some of the themes.
Yeah. And especially, I think, like, I sometimes reflect myself, I think, oh, we didn't really talk about that. Why didn't I think about mentioning that? And you know, if people are sort of listening and thinking, how have they just talked about season X and not talked about, then you know, do let us know, because we might do a special on it. Because you know, there are things that we haven't talked about, and you know, or things about maybe we haven't given as much time as we would like to do. It's the, you know, it's the nature of having, you know, we made the decision to do a half a season, so you kind of try and talk about all the elements, but you can't give maybe them all as much time as you'd like.
No. And I think with this, what we're going to go into now is probably exactly that.
I'm warning people in advance, I've looked at our notes, it's chaos. It's chaos. There's a lot going on in this episode, and that's reflected in our notes. There's a lot of exclamation marks in there.
A lot of exclamation marks. Oh my God. Starting with the episode, The Ballad of Roger Mack, which is, I thought, which Sam Heughan's performance in this was outstanding.
He's very good. We've commented before about how he doesn't really get that credit, but when he has episodes where he is dealing with like his sadness and his trauma, he's so good at that. And I think this one is very much, he's great. You're right. He is outstanding in it.
Yeah. And I think that when you said that about, why didn't we mention that? One of them was when he said goodbye to Marta in the last episode.
Yeah.
They had completely forgotten to write any notes on that. I just thought so special when he says, you know, I relieve you of your oath, and that was so emotional. And then we come into this with Jamie going into battle again.
I literally just wrote, the English are bad buggers, and as an English person, I'm allowed to say that.
Yeah,
but they are bad buggers, you know. History. If you read it from a non-British perspective, we're not covered in glory a lot of the time. And I think this is an example of that. But I thought the sort of tone of the battle as well, with it really reminded me of like when they're preparing for Culloden and the kind of mismatched, of the sides and things like that, and that sort of tone of despair about it all.
Absolutely. And like we open with, well, it's quite nice. It's Jamie's birthday, isn't it? This is when they're in the tent. That was really nice.
I made a note of how Jamie. Old they're supposed to be. And it is his 50th birthday, and which makes her 55.
Yeah.
I feel like, you know, I look barely any different to either of them. as somebody who's 50.
I can absolutely see. Like Ruth looks about 10 years older than she is. It's infuriating. So, you know, I think they're doing great, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
They haven't aged them, but, you know.
I just see them as looking normal.
Yeah, exactly.
I just like, yeah, they look like me. No, I'm flattering myself a lot there, comparing myself to Sam Heughan and Katrina Balfe.
Apart from Jamie's ridiculous, you know, chest and shoulders. I'm not sure how he's getting that physique in the,
yeah, exactly.
In the 1700s.
Like, you're not getting time to do 5-hour workouts in the 18th century, Sam Heughan. That I think their interactions are really nice as well in this.
Yeah, really good. I think they're doing this familiar kind of, almost like they remember how they got through Culloden, and it does really feel like that, like Claire preparing, you know, for the men to come back from the battle, and preparing all her medical supplies and things like that, and then Jamie, you know, getting his men ready and listening to a leader once again who's making a wrong decision and trying to bite his tongue. Jamie coming out wearing the red coat was really emotional, I thought, and I loved the way the first thing that he did was go to Claire immediately, because you know, she was that comfort that he needed and understood more than anyone ever could how hard this would be for him. And she, you know, I love how that's his safe place together.
Yeah. So I think that it's reflected through this series in particular, that when like something has happened or there's some sort of trauma or they always come to each other and see each other as one another safe place. You see, I think when like Jamie's bitten by the snake, and obviously the very last episode, when Claire is raped and assaulted, that I think they associate each other with safety or keeping each other safe.
Definitely.
And I think, you know, even in this case where, you know, Jamie's sort of feelings are hurt to some degree, he still wants to seek Claire out as the person who will understand that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's such a huge, it must be such a huge trigger for him, you know, especially given that, like, he was raped by someone in a red coat, like, even just, like, those colours and those feelings associated with them. And, you know, at the time, when they were in the prison at that time, he came, you know, he's wearing that uniform, like, that is such a, and then he fought an entire battle and lost so many people he loved, including Claire, because of all of these people in these red coats, and now he's made to wear it. So you can only imagine all of these things. And now he's, and also not only that, but also additionally to hunt down a man who is basically like his father.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I think it was really moving scene when she, you know, Claire's face when she sees him.
Yeah.
Just falls, and, you know, she's just always, as always, the way they say goodbye to each other is just really sweet.
I agree.
And the way I loved when he was getting ready for battle in the river, when she comes down to watch him from the side, I just felt like there was something really, like, emotional and also, I don't know, romantic is the wrong word I'm searching for, but just something really private that she's observing.
Something really personal. I agree.
But like something that he, you know, what is fine, you know, it's almost like for him, her being there is, it's not like she's invading anything.
No.
It just showed how comfortable they are with each other.
Yeah, and, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then they obviously send Roger off with the message.
Yeah. I'm gonna jump forward a little bit, and I'm gonna try and not go into Roger Hayton, although it does have an element of that. But I really feel like Murta's death is thrown away in this episode.
Yeah.
like, to me, that should have been like the pinnacle of the episode, and it isn't. It's kind of, you know, they have to go off and find Roger, and
I just think
it just feels like it's kind of brushed past too quickly.
Yeah, I agree. I do think that we're left with the memory of Roger, not with Myrta.
And
you're reminded of it in the next episode a bit. But
yeah,
Jamie does have to kind of get himself together quite quickly.
Absolutely.
That scene when he does come in with Myrta, like, he is so convinced that Claire can save him.
Yeah.
You know, he is just like, you know, save him, fix him. And like, he is just frantic. I was really, when I watched that first, I was really nervous that he was going to just walk out of the tent and murder someone. He was just in that frame of mind. He was so blinded by hatred and loss and grief that he was, he was like trying to rein it in, also expressing all these feelings. I just thought he got that balance just really well of that anger and that hurt.
Yeah.
And then, but then he just has to stop because they have to go find Roger. But I do think he played that part just so well. Like, it really did make me cry this time when I was watching it. I found it really emotional.
And I thought just sort of jumping forward, like, the next scene where he's with Jocasta and they're both talking about Myrta, I just think is really moving, that they kind of, you know, they've not been particularly close, I don't think, and that the loss of Myrta sort of brings them closer, because it is something that they can both genuinely share, because they're both, you know, they both really, really love him. I
thought it was quite moving as well, having Claire and Bree there to witness this initially.
Yeah.
And, you know, it just felt really, I don't know, something that was really consciously done. Like, Bree is trying to be silent in the background, but he was, you know, he's at one of his most vulnerable kind of moments. And Claire is there, as she always is, nearly all of these times, and just to have that addition of Bree, the two people in his life who he's, you know, close to, it was it made it all that more like emotional, I thought.
I agree. I, even though I know Myrta's, because obviously this isn't the first time I've watched it, you know that's coming. It's still, you know, I think how he dies is really, like, you know, almost by somebody following Jamie's instructions, and I think he's just really kind of poignant and heart-rending even more.
It really is. That scene with the two of them against the rock is Jamie saved him. It's just so really, really sad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Done very well, and the best we could have asked for now that we were forced to say goodbye to Myrta. I think it was, you know, a really emotional scene, and one that did him justice, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I don't have a huge amount to say about Roger's. It just makes me more annoyed about him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad. Yeah, there was some ways we kind of got through it quite quickly, because then you're on the next episode and they have him, and then he has these flashbacks.
Yeah. But
equally, I just was irritated because it did remind me of that kind of parallel storyline with Claire supporting Jamie's recovery from his rape and torture by Randall. And I just thought, you know, Claire equally gets really frustrated with Jamie, and, you know, more so because she wants him to bring her into that pain with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just wants to die. But I just found, I don't know, I just find it so irritating. That whole, like, Brie is just so, I thought her performance was very good there when she gets really angry with him, and the way she's like, I wanted to go into a hole and I wanted to die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And also, but like, at no stage have we heard Roger be like, bring me into that hole with you.
No, exactly. That's why I feel so irritated by it. It's like, it's in a way, it's like the most perfect sort of narcissistic response by him, because he doesn't particularly empathize with other people. And definitely didn't with Brie, definitely didn't sort of try to support her through her trauma. And now he's literally moping around silently.
I mean, praise the Lord, because like we didn't.
Oh, yeah. I mean, thankful for small mercies. But I don't know. I think silent Roger's more annoying than speaking Roger.
Like, where's that guitar? Throw it in the fire.
Yeah, that's the only relief. Yeah. We've had no fucking singing.
Quick, he's not looking. yeah, that was like the relief for a moment or two. But yes, equally really, really irritating. Like, everyone's kind of like gathering around him, and it's equally not loads to say about it. Just found it the parallel with Bree's parents and what she's having to go through now, and that was just kind of the only really thing I kind of could pull out of it.
And the only saving grace was the brilliant return of young Ian, and phew, Rollo.
Oh,
Rollo still surviving his adventures.
Yeah, it could have gone either way, and mainly probably a decision made by the actors probably to say, we're not working with this dog anymore. It's too hard. We can't keep doing retakes because of the dog. But it was really nice to see them, and a great storyline to bring in. But yeah, like, and that was what I noticed during that as well, when Roger does eventually start talking, when he's like, everybody wants the old Roger back. We're like, no, Rog, you're grand.
No.
Give us
some of us, fine. yeah. And I think it's a really good sort of return of Ian as like a man with his own, like, he's developed, you know, his own skills and abilities, but also with his own sadness that he's not talking about. But I just think that scene where he sleeps outside because he can't sleep in the bed. And Jamie just says, if it's all right, I'll just stay with you. And I just think, you know, it's like those little things like that that shows how much they care for each other.
Yeah.
It's just really, really lovely. Yeah. Really, really nice.
It was a really sweet scene to see, even when he comes back into it, you know, him kind of saving Jamie's ass. While he gets, and while they're playing, which is really, so you don't really get to see Claire and Jamie as grandparents.
No, you don't. No.
And also a thing that really stood out to me, and I'd forgotten this the first time, it is the only time I've ever heard Katrina Balfe drop her accent, and you can hear her Irish accent so strongly when she's like, go find Granda, and she just says, Granda, like a real Irish, and I was like, oh my god, I can't believe they didn't do, like, it's so strong. So
yeah,
you want to go hear her just drop it for just a second, because she never ever does. It's really funny that it's dropped on the word Granda. But yeah, that was really sweet to see them together like that, and then Ian to come swooping in was really quick, kind of very quick but nice scene.
I was really pleased that Ian came back, because I just think, yeah, he just really adds to it. But I did think like, when they're having the meal and it's all, and he's like not wanting to talk about things, I just think you can't beat a tense dinner table.
Yeah.
and people, you know, people trying to not acknowledge the tenseness, and it, and they just did it really, really well.
Yeah. No, who's not trying desperately not to put your foot in it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. It was brilliant.
Yeah, keep everyone at ease. Yeah, no, that was really nice. And we, and as well, so we've got like some, you know, straight away we've got all characters, something really big happening to them, not like, or sharing something together. Claire, Jamie, Bree, Roger, Ian coming back in with Rolo, and once again, I think we both talked about it, not seeing enough of Marcelly and Fergus.
Absolutely. Just not enough. Just not enough of them. And when you do, they're so good. They're so good. Like the bit where Marcelly's, like Claire's checking that she's okay with her pregnancy and everything, and Marcelly sort of saying how glad she is that Claire's there, and like that she sees her as a ma, and it's just so lovely. I just think
they're so sweet,
but they, you know, like their characters have evolved so far, but I think I just love Marcelly and Fergus, and they are in it enough, and they are this series yet again.
Yeah, not at all. Like Marcelly's in it a bit more, but I don't understand why there is no kind of storyline specifically for them in every season.
Yeah, absolutely.
Obviously Marcy's taking up her role as Claire's apprentice, you know, really well.
Yeah.
I love how she compares things when Claire's showing her how to put a shoulder joint back in, and she's like always comparing it to butchering. Yeah. She's like, oh yeah. So is it the opposite to, and she's like, Yeah, that's it. Like she's just, I love Marcy. She's so sweet.
Yeah.
But their relationship changing and moving and evolving all the time is really lovely. Marcy is just so great.
I agree.
Once Roger gets his voice back, off they go to hunt, and Jamie manages to get bitten by a snake. So here we go now with another, like, and again I was thinking this is over two or three episodes, right? No. It's like, it's not that long. It's like, how is this getting so out of control so quickly?
I'm not joking. If you wrote a timeline, I feel like somebody should do this, like do an Outlander timeline. Not to sort of see the passage of time, but just seeing how much danger they're in and how often and how regularly. Because it would just be like timeline. Little bit of quiet. Danger, 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 danger.
Big red letter.
Little bit of quiet. Danger, 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 danger.
Especially with this season, it's like boom.
Yeah, it's boom. just be all danger, just a big massive danger written across. Yeah.
Locust, boom. And then it's like snake bite, boom.
Snakes. You name it.
Hanging, boom. It's just great. But like my husband came in when I was watching this one, and he was like, oh, here we go again. I was like, and I was like so defensive. I was like, what? He's like, he's dying again. I was like, hold on a second. he hasn't died in like three seasons, okay? So just
technically
off.
He's never died. He's had life-threatening situations.
I was just so defensive. I was like, you actually haven't seen him like this since season three. Okay. So
yeah.
I think
actually you'll find his last near-death experience was a mere 2.5 years ago. Or in the chronology of Outlander, 2 episodes ago.
It was so funny. And then when he was like when he was got well into it, thinking that he was, so I don't remember him getting his leg amputated. It's like, just wait and see now.
Yeah, they're gonna let that happen.
But that was really, oh my god, that was so tense. It was really tense the first time I watched it. It was so going, is this actually gonna happen? And I kept like going over, almost like when Claire went back to the future and you don't know, he's like, oh my god, that's not really gonna happen, is it?
Yeah.
That kind of idea was there.
Because they do kind of really make his, like they mess it up. Although I do have to say, we all, you know, even I, who does not live in a place where there are snakes, I'm fairly confident you're not supposed to suck the venom out, and that doesn't have any effect whatsoever
on the person sucking it out.
Yeah, no, I just don't think that's how it works. So I feel that maybe Roger made it worse, not better. Let's consult a specialist. What are they called? People who study venom and things like that. They've got a special name, haven't they? Let's consult one of them. Would attempting to suck the venom out make this situation worse? Yes or no?
Yes or no?
If yes, it's Roger's fault.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, they do, at least they do make some steps forward, which is the first time we see any sort of interaction with the two of them that's not Jamie being really, really irritated.
Yeah, I mean, they've just created a bonding opportunity, haven't they?
Yeah.
With, you know, I mean, I'm fairly sure they could have created a bonding opportunity that didn't involve near death of Jamie. I mean, why couldn't we have near death of Roger? That would have been better. But then we'd have all been rooting for that to happen, wouldn't we?
Yeah.
So they do.
Yeah, they kind of make some strides. And
yeah. But it did really, really make me laugh that Jamie, even poisoned by a snake, leg hanging off, still manages to build a fire and cook said snake.
Yeah. Like, let me just whip this up real quick.
Yeah, it's like, I might be about to die, but I'm not going to die cold or hungry. No, I think you'll find.
Not a chance. He's all over that shit. He was just like, I mean, he wasn't going to get it from Roger, was he? So there.
No.
He was just thinking ahead.
Exactly.
But when they get him back, like, he is, you know, nearly, it feels like he's nearly gone. I mean, he's so out of it. Yeah. But when she gets him up on the table, I just love when he like is overhearing everything that Claire says. And then he's like, you should work on your bedside manner, Sasha.
Yeah. Yeah, it's absolutely.
So she's just like saying everything. I think she's just so in shock.
Yeah.
How bad it's gotten. It's almost like she's she's forgotten how to take it outside a bit, but I just thought it was a really, really nice, funny moment to break up the tension.
Yeah,
And then obviously that there's like a huge roller coaster there again, because God forbid we wouldn't have one with, you know, him making her say all these promises.
Yeah,
and her and Bree, you know, chatting through it all. It's just really heartbreaking. And eventually, then obviously it's Ian's lecture to Jamie about his leg, which I thought was just so brave of Ian for someone.
Yeah.
He's just sees Jamie as like another father figure. I just thought it was such a brave thing to say, you know, I never thought I'd see the day I'd be ashamed of you.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was a really great moment between the two of them. And
yeah, it is.
And getting him to kind of turn his or change his mind.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's really good. I think it's really good how Ian challenges him and reminds him in a way that nobody else could have done, because obviously it is Ian's dad. It's big Ian. It's a good episode. And again, that kind of closeness of Jamie and Claire, and that you know, that intimacy of, you know, even when they're most vulnerable, of that closeness of it to each other and holding each other. And I just think it's really interesting how that's presented as, you know, like nakedness in a way that you don't get in a lot of things. And, you know, and I think it, in a program that, you know, probably in other hands would be done not as well, where you'd have nakedness, it would only be about sort of titillation, for want of a better word. You know, this is very much positioned as, you know, nakedness as vulnerability and nakedness as safety and intimacy and, you know, just shows that kind of complexity of a relationship and about what being naked together is and touching is. And I just think that's really done well in Outlander. It's not just them being, you know, it's not just they're naked and close to each other, so they're gonna fuck. It's about being close to each other is always that kind of really powerful message that comes through.
Yeah, and it's like that. That's when she wakes and thinks that he's going. That's like, you know, Claire almost reaches to the last thing that she can do to keep him.
Yeah.
Or like, it's like an automatic reaction is to get as close to him as possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
With nothing between them.
Yeah.
And giving him every part of her body, you know, her soul, her mind, her skills as a doctor. Mm. Like, she's like using everything to keep him alive.
Yeah.
And I think that last bit where she does, where the two of them lie naked together was just so powerful in that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then Jamie survives and we're on to the next ordeal.
Yeah. And breathe. Okay. And we're on to the next one.
Oh, really, like, oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
and they do talk about it, I guess, throughout that episode. Jamie's big thing is to Roger is make sure you get Stephen Bonnet. Make sure
you get Stephen Bonnet. It's like a running thing through the episodes that is still something that they have to do. And then obviously that they're off on their mission to exact revenge. And I think, like, men deciding to do things, like the men deciding to seek revenge and then you know, and we see that from both sides. I think that's, you know, that's the parallel, we're given, aren't we, between Jamie's reaction to Bree, even though we know she was, you know, raped, as opposed to Brown's reaction to his daughter choosing to be with somebody that they haven't chosen for her. But still, it's always about like men's reaction, where they will say it's for the women, but, you know, how much is it about them and picking apart their, you know, hurt pride or whatever. So I think the thing that I thought was really important was that it wasn't the men that got to exact the revenge.
Yeah. 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 It was really good that way. Yeah. It was once again, like, really stressful episode. It was just like roller coaster when you're constantly on edge with Stephen Bonnet and then.
Yeah. Another fabulous villain. I know we'd have preferred him not to be an Irish one. Yeah. But I think, you know, another really good villain, like Black Jack Randall.
Yeah.
You know, not just a kind of one dimensional villain, but like genuinely like multi-layered. And, you know, the scene where he's kidnapped her and he's like playing house.
Yeah.
Is so, so stressful and tense.
Yeah. Really tense.
And, but also showing, you know, that he shows like how vulnerable he is and also how he's become like a broken person because of bad things happening to him.
Yeah.
And I think that's an interesting thing because I don't think they really do that with Blackjack. With Blackjack, they've just got him out as like pretty much a sociopath. Whereas
stuff with his brother.
Yeah, apart from the sort of strange relationship with his brother. But with Bonnet, you're kind of almost given reasons why he's ended up being you know, this sort of broken human being who doesn't know how to be a good person kind of thing.
Yeah.
but it doesn't take away from how absolutely tense that whole thing is.
Yeah, you really are like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And then an awful, awful man comes to take her.
Yeah.
That's kind of when you start panicking a bit. You're like, oh my God, what's going to happen? And once again, Claire saves the day by using her skills to get the answer for where they are.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Brilliant.
And then they obviously run up to them on the beach, which was a great scene. And brought straight into Bonnet drowning, which is what his biggest fear was.
Yeah, that and that does a lot of foreshadowing. I think even into the previous series, he talks about that as a fear.
Yeah, with Claire when she's when they're in the carriage or in the cart, the horse and cart, and she's fixing him up.
And I think I think it's one of the things that I do like is where Roger says when Bree shoots him and Roger says, you know, something like,
oh yeah, he says,
you know, is that to make sure he's dead, or you know, and she just does and she just doesn't say anything, she just kind of does this look, and I just think that's good.
Yeah, really good. And also, why does it matter to him? You know, it's almost like he's accused. He says it like in an accusatory way or something.
I know, and it's. I think it's at times like that. It's almost. I always think he's a bit, like a bit robotic. Like he can't understand other people's feelings.
But it's also just really. It's. I don't know. It's almost like all his insecurities are coming out, and he has to be constantly reassured.
Yeah,
that, like, you know, it's like, what do you think she feels about him?
Yeah,
it's like, you know, why do you need her to answer that? Like,
yeah,
or maybe she just wanted to be the one to kill him. Like,
yeah, exactly.
No, you know, she was like defying what her father said and doing what she felt was right for her.
Yeah,
it was like, you'll never get peace, and she's like, you know what? This will bring me peace. It's like,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Such an intimate thing. It's like, why do you need to know? But he says it in such an accusatory way. It really pissed me off.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. It is irritating. I mean, he's just irritating, isn't he?
if you didn't know yet,
just spoiler alert. We're not big fans of Rog.
I'm gonna put it out there now.
Just you know. If you haven't realised after 12 episodes, we're not his biggest fans.
No, no. And then Bree and Roger then realise that Jemmy can travel through the stones.
So yeah.
All the preparation for that, which feels like it almost felt like, oh, this is the series coming to an end now. And
yes.
And I felt like that was going to be the build up. And I was just really, really emotional, like Marceline saying goodbye and her then, you know, saying goodbye to her mom, who Claire keeps avoiding.
Yeah.
Avoiding her. It's all very, like, it's all very heightened and very emotional that it feels like just such a shock when Claire gets kidnapped.
Yeah.
She does.
Although I do want to just touch on one small thing here that has been bothering me for a couple of seasons. Why is Lizzie a servant still? Why is that? Yeah. Why? It was just a whole masquerade to get across to America. You don't have to keep her as an indentured servant.
But isn't that she won't leave her?
Well, maybe, but I would like to see that employment agreement and what her wages are, please.
Yes, if you could please lay out the terms of her contract.
Could you just lay out the terms of her contract? What annual leave she gets?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's really important. You know, yeah. Does she get sick pay?
What's the health and safety policy?
Yeah. Let us know. Yeah.
It's not, exactly. It is definitely not clear. And it's because at one stage she was the one like sleeping out in the hut and everyone in the house.
Yeah.
It's really, really unusual.
Yeah, but stop buying into the 18th century, you know, let's bring some 20th century employment rights into this, please.
Absolutely.
If you want to do anything for early America, introduce good employment law. Because blimey, you know, nothing shocks me more than when I see how many days annual leave American workers get.
I know. Or maternity leave.
Yeah, exactly. What is it, like an hour after you've given birth and then you have to go back to
back
work?
Back in the office, please. Sorry, you were late back from lunch there. Oh,
yeah.
Birth.
and that also, yeah. I have noted that Claire never seems to charge people for her health skills. So have we secretly introduced universal healthcare to the United States in the 18th century?
That's literally what Claire's trying.
That's what Claire's
done. Agenda.
Claire's agenda is penicillin and universal healthcare.
Oh, that would be so good. It'd be like, you know, if they never actually found out, but then it sort of switched to 200 years later and it's a different America.
That was just the norm.
Yeah, and it was like, oh, this is because of this person, Claire.
She made us realise we shouldn't be charging for healthcare.
Yeah. And it goes back and then suddenly it's like, oh, you did change the course of history. But yeah, in a very different
didn't
way.
Didn't stop any of the wars, but you essentially created a socialist utopia in the United States.
That would be so funny. A real Outlander twist at the end of season 8. yeah, but that's because that's their last, they have their last meal. Is it their last meal together when Claire makes
the peanut butter and jelly, yeah.
It's really funny the way Jamie just, like, first of all, starts cutting it up with a fork and knife.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I like that he eats it, like, with a knife and fork. And and then everybody acknowledges how cloying peanut butter is, which I mean, I like peanut butter, but it is a bit. I mean, I think that's another, you know, I was trying to work out the time frame for when sandwiches were introduced.
Mm.
And so she might have technically introduced a sandwich, invented a sandwich, maybe slightly earlier than the Earl of Sandwich.
Yeah. And now she's going to have her name out there.
Exactly.
With all this. It's brilliant. That would be a really funny episode if they were like, this is what actually happened. 200
Yeah, all these little tiny things that she does. Like, yeah. They're just focusing on all the big things and thinking that, and it's just all these little tiny things that she's doing.
Yeah.
Change the course of history.
Brilliant. We obviously then find out that Bree and Roger didn't make it, which we never really understand properly, do we?
No, I don't know whether that's going to get picked up. I was thinking about it more this time I watched it. And I did wonder, they kind of explain it as that they were thinking of home.
Yeah, that's the only thing, yeah.
But, I mean, that's a little bit Wizard of Oz, isn't it?
And it's also like...
And that's never been the... Exactly, that's not... Exactly, that's not been... You don't wish for your destination. I mean, she just went through the stones the first time, didn't she?
Yeah, Claire didn't wish, like, she wasn't thinking of anything.
She wasn't idly thinking of, you know, 18th century Scotland.
A tall red-headed Scot that was going to sweep up.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like that's a little, it just feels a bit of a lame reason.
And it also doesn't align with Roger's character, because he's definitely not thinking of that place as home.
No,
I was thinking of home too, and it's like,
yeah, it's like, oh, and this is where you're thinking, this is where really is your home. It's like, ugh, I don't believe that.
Not for a second.
I don't believe that. So I did one of the things that I did think about was like the opal and the opal cracking when Jemmy holds it, and I did wonder if it was something like I'm gonna say this phrase and it's not right phrase, and sincere apologies to anybody who believes this, but it's like, you know, maybe his chakras aren't quite aligned. Yeah, for getting to the stones.
Oh, so he's the reason why they don't go through. Oh,
that's kind of what I maybe thought. Yeah, because like,
ooh,
like, you know, they talk about like the stone feeling hot and hearing the buzzing, but they've never had anything like break before. And they were saying like, oh, it broke from the heat. But
yeah,
I don't know. So part of me wondered, is it something to do with that?
Yeah, will they go back on that? Yeah, that's
true. Yeah. Yeah,
that is true.
So that was like just my kind of musings on why they don't go through. Yeah. But they obviously go for a short period of time because they disappear to Ian.
Yeah, they disappear and come back and Ian sees them, yeah.
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 And so they do pass through and then return, but...
Yeah, because they definitely disappear because Ian sees them disappear.
Yeah, and he goes to try, doesn't he?
Yeah. And then Claire is obviously gone, and Jamie and Fergus and them come back to I think Marcelly's still out of it.
Well, that's where they find out that she's unconscious.
Yeah.
And the little boy tells them.
Yeah. Yeah, so then, and then Jamie obviously lights the fire, and they go on the hunt. In the meantime, we're obviously faced with learning about Claire's tragedy, because I think it closes with Jamie lighting the fire, and then the last episode starts, and the whole thing is this dream sequence that Claire is having to cope with her trauma, which I really, really liked stylistically, and I just thought it was really clever writing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, just the way that she imagines Jamie, her image of Jamie in that moment is when they first met, like we have his lovely curly wavy red hair back and not the horrendous wig, and when everyone else looks the way they do now.
Yeah, yeah. And everybody else has got contemporary styling. Yeah,
contemporary styling, but is the same age. Like Myrta's got white hair, and you know, everyone's older apart from Jamie. And I think, and my husband kind of debated this with me a little, that he is the only one not dressed in 70s outfit that he's wearing.
It's not 100% that, because he comes into the house and he's got a leather jacket on, and he's also got like he's got trousers on that aren't 17, you know, that aren't the 18th century style. So it's kind of a bit of a mishmash, because he does have the loose linen shirt on.
Yeah. That's exactly what Mitch said. He was like, those trousers are definitely not 18th century. But yeah, because everyone else is like really obviously.
Yeah,
like,
they're all obviously.
Yeah, you know, even Fergus's, you know, dead straight hair and Marcelly's very bright. They're all wearing these like real bright, striking colours.
And they choose a grey location, like the house.
Yeah.
You know, obviously very, very modern and
like real.
But it's a good I have issue with Outlander's use of rape as a narrative device, but I think they do it well. Because I think, you know, they create, it's very much from Claire's perspective. Mm. It's rooted in, like, you know, going back to like that idea of what is their safe place, you know, for Claire, that is Jamie, being in Jamie's arms, you know, almost like, you know, mirroring that when they first met, you know, even like stood there with a tartan shawl around her and,
like her, that's, it's interesting, that's where her, when in huge massive trauma, her mind goes to that place where you know, I can almost, you know, you're chattering, what is it, you're chattering so hard you're making my teeth rattle, the way, that's exactly what he says, and then he wraps it. It's like I just find it really, really interesting way of showing us she's having a trauma, and this is where her mind has gone. And it repeats, because it goes in a loop, doesn't it? Like she goes back to him coming in several times and her turning to look for him, like searching for him almost.
Yeah.
So she can hear him, but she searches and then finds him. And then, like you say, him enveloping her is like a big thing.
Yeah.
Of her being
seen. Yeah. And even you know, the song is about, you know, a love that lasts forever, you know. So the song is one of my favorites. It's by, if anybody doesn't know, it's by The Associates, and it's called Never My Love from 1967.
Yeah,
it's a great psych pop hit. But even, you know, even the lyrics are kind of about that kind of, will you ever, you know, will it, you know, with the passing of time, will you grow tired of me? And it's like, you know, never my love.
Never my love. Yeah.
So I think, you know, even the song choice is reflecting that kind of,
so good.
You know, that deep love that they have for each other. I think it's really, really good. But yeah, I think the, and I also think that it makes like the intercutting between the sort of safe space, like the bright colour safe space of the dream.
Yeah.
With the reality of her kidnapped, beaten, you know, on the ground, dirty kind of, makes it even more shocking and horrible, because you go from this kind of bright, well-lit space to this horrible, dark, threatening, with these voices off in the distance that are saying terrible things. And
really,
I think it's
really frightening.
It's really, yeah, and I think they capture that really well. And I think the only thing, sort of weird thing I would say is, like, they introduce that character who is also a time traveler. Kind of, I don't really feel like they needed to have him, other than, you know, that she hopes he would be somebody that would save her and he doesn't.
Yeah, I was wondering, were they trying to find a circle for Ottertooth?
Yeah.
Because obviously he's brought in season 4, and then she realizes he's from the future, and then we kind of don't, it's kind of, we feel like that might be tied, that might be the end of it at the end of season 4. But then it comes in, but then at the, when Claire asks Jamie, was there a Native American man, you know, amongst the slaughter or whatever? And he says, no. Did he just leave and not save her? And is that what season, that is that the, in the next season, there's a bit of a hint to something in the future. And I'm just wondering, is this supposed to run through now? Which would be quite interesting. But I it was kind of a bit strange. It was horrible. It just kind of got our hopes up. It was really awful to look at and to watch.
Yeah.
And that whole scene, that whole thing was horrendous. And then, and I was wondering about that. I read it once that when Sam Heughan talks about season 1 and that episode where he's raped, and he said it was, I think it was a few seasons on when he was being interviewed, and he said he doesn't think he would do that again, and that a rape scene like that again. And that's why I was wondering, and I know it's like you say, it's why they have to keep repeating this theme over and over again, and even though I thought the way they dealt with this trauma was just much better way of having to play it out.
Yeah,
and I'm just wondering, was that a discussion for this, that they were like, well, we really can't show this like this again?
Yeah,
show this kind of trauma, that they didn't want to play it out like that on screen again as well, given that both Sam Heughan and Katrina Balfe are producers. Producers on the show,
they
would have a lot more probably input now at this stage, as opposed to series 1.
Yeah,
they were like, we need to find some new creative ideas to try and, you know, engage this storyline. But
I think it is. And I'm sure people would make the case that there was a lot of sexual violence in the 18th century, and there will have been a lot of sexual violence in the 18th century. But sexual violence happening and sexual violence being used as a kind of narrative device to move a story forward, which is often what happens in Outlander, is the main thing I have a problem with. You know, if it's used as it's something to happen rather than it representing something. Which I think this kind of does a bit more than Sam Hune's and Brianna's, Sam Hune's, Jamie's and Brianna's rapes. This is, I think there's a big build through this season. Maybe a bit more than when they're in Scotland, I think, of, you know, men's attitude to women and women's like role in the society, their treatment by society, their lack of protection under the law. So I do think that there's maybe a bit more of that played out. You know, obviously the Browns very much this misogynistic, patriarchal family. Whose power and patriarchy is threatened by Claire.
Yeah.
You know, fundamentally.
Absolutely.
But yeah, it's still a tough episode. And I think as well it's interesting because, like, you know, obviously Claire is so good with other people's suffering and supporting them, but like her, like, not being able to cope with the impact it's had on her. Like she says, I've survived a fucking war, I've survived this, I've survived that, this, you know, this isn't, I can't remember what the word she used, this isn't the thing that's going to break me or something.
Yeah.
And again, I think, like, setting us up to see how she does deal with it in the next season. But yeah. I could quite relate to that as somebody who finds it very difficult to not acknowledge that they can't cope with things. So I think it was very good for her character.
Yeah, you're dead right. Yeah, it was. In the depths of her trauma, like you say, she's always the one, you know, making sure people are okay. And that's kind of like the first thing she says is, you know, how is this person? How is that person?
Yeah.
And she comes back home.
Yeah, she checks on Marcelly, doesn't it? She doesn't, she? Yeah.
And the patient, I think, that she had at the time. And, like, you know, that's her first port of call is to, like, make sure everyone else is okay.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking about Jamie through this whole thing. And I come back to this with you each time. I think, and I've messaged you about this before. I just don't get it. And I thought I would be able to resolve it this time round, but I don't. Someone explain to me how this is Jamie's character throughout her, like, Claire's whole ordeal, how the way he behaves and acts is like Jamie. Because I just don't understand, I just don't get it. I just don't think he would be this calm or kind of just make these statements. And, like, at some stage, he does make one statement to say, you know, seeing you like this is, you know, it's killing him. But I just, and I when I watched it this time, when he does see her first, he is, like, shocked to his core to see her. And I felt maybe he doesn't want, like, he can't leave her. She is, like, the most vulnerable she's ever been. And he needs to get over his pride or his ego and just be what she needs him to be, which is right there with him, with her. And so I was like, well, maybe that's why he doesn't. But when you think about Bree and what happened to Bree and his anger then and the revenge he even gets on Roger, thinking that that's the person who raped her, was just, you know, he was blind with anger. And now he's just kind of, I don't know, I just thought he was just too calm for my liking. I don't read that
as him being calm. They literally slaughter like fucking 50 people. So I don't take it as being calm. I take it as him like doing the opposite, like doing the right thing, whereas, you know, we're not supposed to think he does the right thing with his response to Brianna, because he makes that about him. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, I think he, you know, because Claire is the person he loves the most, and so he does kind of put his stuff to one side so that, you know, like I think the bit that makes me think that is like where they come over and say there's still some of them alive.
Yeah.
And he says about Claire doesn't kill people, that's what, you know, he does it for her.
Yes.
But yeah. I think it's like he knows in that moment he can't do that because he has to be with her. Because, you know, going back to this idea of them being one another's safe place, like, mm-hmm. she absolutely needs him to keep that safe place for her at that moment, which is why he kind of trusts them to go. Because I just think he looks like he's so filled with rage when he tells them to go and kill the others. Yeah.
I thought that.
So yeah, I don't think he's being out of character. I think he's being like what he is when he's with Claire the most, which is the most kind of thoughtful and more centered.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess I was always thinking about his reactions are always, you know, his reactions are always so strong. And then, when I was watching this last night, that was one of the things that struck me, was when Claire, you know, she can't really talk, and she's just when they say stuff to her, she reminded me of when she lost Faith. Her whole body just curls in on itself, and she's just looks so fragile.
Yeah,
and she does the same with Faith. She just curls in on herself when she's in that real state of trauma. And it was like, you know, she didn't need to say anything because Jamie knows exactly, you know, he's like, she's taking an oath and that's what I kill for her. And then obviously sends them all back. Not so much in that scene, but I thought there would be something with him and Brian. What's his name? Brian? I thought there would be some sort of interaction with the two of them in some way.
But I think that's the difference between like, how they've treated the rape in the season one and how they've treated it in this one, which is you can't make it about the men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You have to keep the woman centered. And, you know, even the big fight when they're killing them all, that's all happening sort of over there.
Yeah,
you stay centered with Claire the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that's powerful.
And I think that's the thing. It's not about the fighting. It's not about what the men do to each other. It's about how she survives.
Yeah.
So I think that's the thing for me. It's not making it just adventurous or action. It's like, this is happening over here around her, but it's not important. What's important is her and her sort of survival.
And I think that, and that's like, throughout, even just from the start, the way we just see, that's kind of, it's like even the camera shot is always from her lying down,
always from her perspective,
from her perspective of the fire. You never see a close-up range of what's happening around the fire,
no,
ever. But a couple of times when the Fraser's Ridge guys come, but not really. Roger kills someone, and then he goes and asks Bree to turn the light off so she can tell him. He can tell her.
I know.
I'm just like, oh my God, are you fucking serious? I can't believe we're making this into a thing.
It just makes everything, still makes everything about him, doesn't it?
He's like,
narcissist.
He's like, was like, this wasn't, like you say, like, this isn't about you. This was about rescuing Claire.
Yeah.
And what you had to do for Jamie. It was like, stop making it about yourself.
Exactly.
But yeah, it was a really shocking and just really well, like, all everyone involved in that episode, I thought, just was everything from the writing to the to the direction to the creativity of it, and once again, like, Sam Heughan and Katrina Balfe especially was just fantastic. Yeah.
And I thought Lauren Lyle, when Marcelly kills Brown,
yes, I love, yeah,
is, you know, she's, I like how she, you know, she, you know, she's responding very directly to his misogyny.
Yeah.
And then just like when Jamie comes in, she's like, am I going to go to hell? And just that whole, her whole performance is brilliant. Really brilliant.
Yeah. It was so good. I was so glad she was the one to.
Yeah. And again, it's story. Like Bree had to be the one that killed Bonnet. It had to be a woman that killed Brown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think there was, that was really important. And that it was Marcelly. Yeah, I thought it was really good.
Yeah, I just love the way she reacts to, you know, what he's saying. I love her scripted part there. It was just so good.
Yeah.
When she was like, we're going to take really good care of you. And
yeah.
He's like, he's almost like, she's in that calm way.
Yeah.
She's absolutely scaring the shit out of him.
Yeah.
He's like, what are you doing and what's that? And yeah, that was really good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really done good. Really well. It's done really, really well.
But
But all in all, a very brutal half a season, I thought.
Was never ending. My God.
It was hardcore. Shall we finish on some of the lighter notes of fashion?
Yeah, because I think we've covered like all the feminist themes that kind of run through.
I mean, what it did make, there's a good sex scene, I think, but I don't feel it's appropriate to talk about that after we've just talked about an episode that's all about rape. I know rape isn't really about sex, but maybe one of our specials should just be about all the sex special.
Yeah, definitely. But one other one that a different theme to that was when you know, Bree's trying to figure out what her calling is. She asks about Claire's career and her, you know, her path that she's chosen, and whether she's ever doubted that. And she asks about whether Da is satisfied, and Claire responds to that, you know, being a husband and a father, and you know, those are no small things. And I just really liked the way she acknowledged, the way that was acknowledged in a way.
Yeah.
When you think about, that's what women have been fighting for years, for recognition for.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't, because without ever having, you know, a lot of women just, especially then, there was no choice about having a career. You didn't have one.
No.
So, you know, your job was to be at home and do your duty, as the Browns, you know, so put it, so all the time. But I just thought it was just an interesting thing to be.
Yeah.
It was really smart,
yeah.
But
I think also that Claire makes people think of that, you know, like Marcelly developing her calling as a medic as well.
Is really
powerful in this. And ultimately that conversation is one of the things that means that Bree saves Jamie, because she thinks about the snake fang.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Being able to inject the penicillin.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a really good, I love that.
I thought it was really clever.
And she burst through like in the last second.
Like, yeah, exactly, exactly.
Because it wasn't dramatic enough.
No, exactly, exactly. We just got to have a snipping the wire with 1 second left on the on the clock. Moment.
Fashion Again, yeah, I didn't really have a lot to say here.
No, I mean, I feel like we're, you know, we're into sort of thinner territory here now, aren't there? But I mean, what I would say, not fashion per se, but the quilt that's on the bed when Jamie's being bitten by the snake, I think is really lovely. I know I'm all about the homewares. If it's not glassware, it's a quilt.
Yeah, love it.
But I did like that quilt.
Yeah. Yeah, no, you're, yeah, that was really nice. I didn't really, there was, again, the casual clothes are really nice. I love the greens, blues, and they introduced a lot more rusty kind of colours for Brie, which was really lovely against her hair.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the 70s dream sequence I liked Marcy's mini dress on her specifically. I just thought, yeah, she just pulled it off so well.
Yeah.
The long sleeve mini dress with the hair and the makeup. I just loved that whole look on her.
Yeah, it did look, yeah, it looked good. Well. Yeah, yeah. And I liked Claire's red dress. But that might be because I do also have a red vintage 60s dress. So it did remind me of that.
Love it. But I wonder, is there a link that just when you... When you said Claire's red dress, I wonder, does she choose that colour red because of the other red dress?
I mean, possibly.
I'd never thought about that before, that she goes...
Possibly.
To, is that her... You know, she was so proud of that red dress.
Yeah.
I wonder, is that why she goes back to that place in her head?
But maybe. Yeah,
it is fabulous. Looks so good in her with her hair as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good look.
But we're into now... Next is season six.
Yeah,
this is the last one that's been filmed. Well, that's been out.
And yeah,
this is super short, right? This is only 8 episodes.
Yeah, one more season to go. We might throw a special in there or two, yeah. Depending on how the, you know, the mood takes us. Mm. But I would, you know, please do, you know. Raters, reviewers, followers. If you do that, then more people can find the pod. Follow us on Instagram, 10 Things Outlander. It's always really get in touch with us. We really have enjoyed hearing from people.
Yeah, but, it's really nice.
And hopefully we'll keep getting new listeners. So we can keep having these amazing, insightful conversations.
Yes, they definitely are. I really enjoyed this one now. I definitely needed to chat through all my emotions about this. So if you're following along with us, make sure to catch up on season 6.